What is peace brain? Peace brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and we're very happy to have you today on the Peace Brain Show. Today we're going to be talking about an exciting topic of mindful eating, of really how to throw away your diet and lose weight at the same time. So we will get into that in a few minutes. We have a wonderful guest, Ms. Martha McGinnis, to talk about that. And, of course, at the end of the show, we have a powerful peace brain meditation, so please stay tuned all the way to the end of the show for that meditation. And so, as always, I open the show with a quote, and today we have a quote from Andreas Moritz, and it's from his book, Timeless Secrets of Health and Rejuvenation. And his quote is, in 1984, Nobel laureate Carlo Rubbia proved that the human body is composed mostly of energy and very little matter. To be exact, for each particle of matter, there are 974,600,000 units of energy, or photons. In other words, only 1/1,000,000,000 of your body consists of matter, and the rest is vibrational energy. So take a breath and think about that for a moment. We are really made up of just energy, just these photons, these particles of light, if you will, and that is really who you are. The matter, the physical matter, is only 1/1,000,000,000 of what you are. So even though we walk around, and it's not just us, of course, it's the table in front of you or the seat you're sitting on, everything is really made of energy. And so when we choose to change our energetic makeup, we actually can easily change our matter makeup, our physical makeup. So a lot of this we'll get into today, talking about your mindfulness and moving forth and what you eat, really being making it in synergy with your body and your energy, and that we have such a powerful way of changing our life and our bodies and our path going forward to peace just by realizing that we are mostly made up of energy. So I love that quote. That's really amazing. And, of course, that was a Nobel laureate that discovered that. So this is scientific facts, guys. So this show is about making peace with our bodies. And I'm really happy to have this today and to hear what Martha McGinnis has to say about this, because it's really about how we can look at our weight in a whole different way, look at our bodies in a whole different way. And it's not just for people with weight issues and those, you know, it's for everyone. It's for those who, anyone who's had a judgmental thought about your body. And, of course, who hasn't, right? or a judgmental thought about someone else's body. And I'm sure we've all done that at one time or another, considering what the media does around our looks and our bodies. So Martha today comes to the Peace Brain Show, and she, let me give you her bio. She has an MBA, and she's also an AIM eating coach, A-I-M, and that stands for Aligned Intuitive Mindful Eating Coach. And she's founder of Rethinking Food. She's a coach, a leader of workshops and training programs, and a speaker who helps others discover the diet-free, willpower-free, boy, that's really good, path to lasting weight loss, and has enabled her to maintain a 45-pound weight loss for over 30 years. It's really fantastic. She is a certified intuitive eating counselor and developer of AIM eating approach, which enables high achievers who are frustrated with their lack of success in dieting to regain their power over food so that they can maintain a happy weight, eat with joy and satisfaction, feel comfortable in their bodies, and build the energy and confidence to follow their dreams. And, of course, we all need that if we're going to create a peaceful world. She gave me a quote of that she believes in, that is her quote, "Weight loss diets are inherently violent. They put people at war with their own bodies and cause more harm than good. There is another approach to weight control that's peaceful, joyful, empowering, and in the long run, far more effective." So I'm really excited about this. She has been facilitating groups since 1994. She's president of Visual Logic, Inc., which is another company she owns, and has provided graphic recording and facilitation services to a broad array of organizations. And if you don't know what graphic recording is, it's when you see those videos where someone is writing with a marker all of the wonderful words and pictures. She's really very talented at that. And this work has taken her around the world to put her in front of groups from anywhere from size 2 people to 1,300 in size. She's currently on the board of the Southeast Association of Facilitators, SEAF, and that's actually where I met Martha, is at the Southeast Association of Facilitators. And she's a past president of both the International Forum of Visual Practitioners and former Atlanta Treasury Management Association. You can find out more about Martha at rethinkingfood.net, rethinkingfood.net. So, welcome, Martha, to the Peace Brain Show.
Hi, Gail. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm really happy to have you here. So, you are such a multi-talented woman, not only working as a facilitator and a graphic recorder and a coach, obviously, in this amazing sort of new lifestyle of throw away your diet and your willpower, but learn really how to work with your body. So tell us a little bit more about rethinking your food.
Okay. Well, and I wanted to say thank you for the energy quote. That's really wonderful. And, you know, dieting involves so much negativity. We start from a negative judgment about ourselves, and it seems to bring negativity in over and over again. A few years back, I looked back, and I realized that my life had been utterly transformed by a simple insight that I had many, many years ago. And that was that my fat wasn't making me miserable. Instead, my misery was making me fat. And so at that point, I didn't know what to do about it, but I knew that there was something true in that, true for me. And so I gradually stopped focusing on the fat, and I began paying more attention to the thoughts, feelings, and habits that had led me to eat too much in the first place. I learned to listen to my body and eventually to eat in a way that led to a stable, happy weight. That insight was actually more than 40 years ago, and I have been 45 to 55 pounds below my top weight for well over 30 years now. I've lost a few more pounds in the last few years, as it happens as we get older sometimes. And the thing is, it's so wonderful to be free of dieting and free to enjoy a good meal, free of guilt and shame. Those were all things that troubled me at that point in my life. And I decided I want to really share that with others. So that's how I got here.
Wow, that's a great story. So tell us a little bit about when you're working with someone. You mentioned already it's about the thoughts that we have towards our bodies, and you're right. Every time I would think about a diet, the word diet itself has these connotations of something's wrong with me, I need to change where I am, and you know, either lose or some people actually gain, you know, weight, that something's out of alignment, and that we can be neutral to that alignment statement, but most of us are not because of what society says, and particularly, we just got through watching a movie, some colleagues of mine and friends of mine called it Misrepresentation, and it's about the way the media displays women, and particularly
that,
you know, that we're only really good for our bodies. So that's obviously not a true statement. But what's out there in the public is really, you know, it's about your looks. And so this trying to compare with everyone and not be our true self and whatever our true body is supposed to be gets to be really damaging to the soul. You know, I was going to say the ego, but it's really the soul. So how would you direct someone?
People feel like failures. You know, they feel... they have terrible thoughts about themselves. And the media, women in particular, have more than 90% of women have a negative thought every day about themselves and their bodies.
Wow.
And some people, for some people, it's constant. It's not just one thought a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like every other thought is something negative about themselves. And there's very little to counter that out there. And one of the things that, that makes it very hard for people to make the transition to this way of eating, because they have to be patient. Weight loss doesn't come as fast as with many diets, and so they feel like they're under so much pressure and they want it, they want fast change. But there's a problem with that, and I'll talk about it a little bit more later, but fast weight loss actually puts people at war with their bodies.
Well, we could, I mean, I know what you're talking about. That's the starvation response, isn't it? Or what?
Yeah. Yeah, it took me 5 or 6 years to learn this way of eating. But now I've discovered that there are really well-defined principles around intuitive eating and the practices of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's research to back them up. None of that was available, you know, 40 years ago when I started trying to figure out what was wrong with me. But now, and it took me many years to work through it, but now people can begin to put the skills into practice quickly. And within a matter of months, then they can dramatically change their relationship to food. But the actual weight loss takes a little bit longer. But the wonderful thing, though, is the sense of freedom and self-confidence, and they begin to feel less guilt and more trust in themselves almost immediately, because one of the first things I teach is it's not your fault. Diets actually cause people to gain weight. 85% of people gain back every pound they lose within 2 years. 40% will gain more after going on a diet. Only 15% actually keep the weight off, and a lot of those people basically stay on a diet the rest of their lives. You know, they're constantly watching what they eat. And, you know, I just couldn't live that way, and a lot of people choose not to live that way.
So explain that. That's a really sad statistic. You know, it makes me think, wow, what's, you know, here you are wanting to feel better about yourself with all the negative judgments of society and or, you know, whatever, doctor or family or friends, and go on a diet, and then that may work at first, but then that doesn't work in the long run. So, wow. So how do you...
And that's what happened to me, actually. I started at 13 on my first diet, and I maybe was like 5 pounds overweight. I ended up gaining 65, and that was after losing the weight. I totally lost touch with my body and became a habitual eater for lots of reasons. So the dieting restrictive approaches to eating, they set off this process you mentioned called the starvation response. And that's the body's way of defending itself. It brings on a whole host of physical, mental, and behavioral challenges that the dieter must fight in order to be successful. So that's why we need willpower dieting. Our bodies are fighting back against the diet. And then when we fail at dieting and gain it back, we blame ourselves and we feel like failures, which creates an extraordinary amount of frustration and negativity. And that comes out in many ways in our lives, not just in our bodies, you know, but it's expressed in our relationships with other people and in our work. This way of eating helps people listen to hunger and satisfaction, and it because the weight loss is slower and more gradual, it doesn't trigger the starvation response.
interesting. So when you say listen to hunger, are you saying let's say that if my body is not hungry, to skip a meal or to just eat when I feel hungry?
That's one approach, and it actually works. That's what I did for many years, because I just, my strategy, not knowing much about it, was simply to try to wait until I was actually hungry. You don't have to do that necessarily. It's okay, and it's fine if it's 1 o'clock and you know that you can't eat again till 4, and you know you'll be hungry by 3. Eating a meal makes perfect sense. But it's important before a meal to ask yourself, how hungry am I? In the middle, ask yourself, how hungry am I now? And at the end, again, check in with your body and start to pay attention. And the magic comes when you realize that you still want food, but you're not actually hungry. And then I teach people it's okay. It's actually okay to eat, but think about why. Begin thinking about why you want food. You know, there are hundreds of reasons why people eat. We eat because we're bored. We eat because we're anxious. We eat because we're celebrating. You know, there are so many reasons, and they're all okay. They're human. The problem is when those reasons take over and they're not balanced later by eating less. So we have to sort of get in touch with hunger and use that as a signpost. Just touch in with it. Notice you're hungry, and then you can eat. I don't ask people to stay hungry. This is not like a diet.
Right.
Hunger is a natural signal, and you need to be aware of it. And the thing is, as you start listening, it actually gets stronger, and you become more and more aware of it.
You know, it's interesting because you make me think about times when I've been traveling and I'm in another country and I only have access to food, and this is kind of off the subject of what you just meant about hunger, but I only have access to food at the three meals, the three main times, because I'm being served, you know, by whatever bed and breakfast I'm in, that type of thing, or workshop I'm with. And so there's no snacking in between, but they're good meals in between. I mean, they're good meals during those times, those three times, and with simple foods and with, you know, not processed foods and all of that, at home things. And I remember feeling very satisfied, not eating very much. I mean, not eating, overeating, in other words, at any of those meals, and not being hungry in between, and then actually, I think I lost weight on the times I was gone for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what was interesting? Because they were new foods, probably, I suspect you were really paying more attention to them also.
That's true.
We eat just unconsciously, and, you know, you finish a plate of food or a tray of cookies and not even really check in. So,
that's true.
And so satisfaction happened long ago, but you just kept eating. You never noticed. And so that's another thing. That's the other signpost I teach people about, actually, is satisfaction. We discover we need a lot less food than we're used to eating, but we get more pleasure out of it. And real food, that's an important thing. Part of my program is really not so much about the specific foods. In fact, people have generated, we have so many rules that we get so in our heads about what we're supposed to be eating, it gets in the way of paying attention to how we actually feel. But I do advocate real foods because your body knows how to process them and react to them.
Absolutely.
Some artificial sweeteners and some of those things, they actually say that, you know, the body reacts in surprising ways to those, and so you're getting in the way of the natural response.
And there are other ways. You know, you make me think of the artificial sweeteners, in particular, that stevia is a natural sweetener, and the body knows how to react to it. My brother was diabetic, and, you know, he couldn't eat sugars, but he could have stevia, and it was it's an herb that's just ground up and is sweet.
Right.
So I know that is another way of using these natural products that we can put in our foods.
Interesting. You know, that reminds me, people who are in danger of diabetes, this way of eating actually helps them normalize their blood sugar. You don't have the, because they're listening to their bodies, they don't have the same ups and downs. This also tends to modify, neutralize the cravings that we get. You're less likely to crave sugar and things that aren't good for you. And it's not because you can't have them. In fact, by allowing yourself permission, sometimes that actually reduces the desire for something. When we know we can't have it, we want it more. And that's just
true.
It's just human nature, you know?
It's true.
So.
Oh, my. So back to the thoughts for a moment, because I know this is a key part of your program and a key part of any part of life. And certainly in my peace classes and working with, you know, how do we create peace, it really is about how we're thinking and how we're perceiving the world around us. So how can we sort of break that within society? How can you break this negative thought pattern, at least in our own selves and our maybe around us, the people around us?
Well, you know, it starts with genuine compassion towards ourselves.
Mm.
And you know, that's not something that we actually learn much about in Western society.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be very judgmental and critical, self-critical. There's always something we can improve. And that's true, but it often starts from a place of negativity, that we start from, oh, there's something wrong with me. So I need to be improved. And a real self-compassion is acceptance. And it doesn't mean that you don't necessarily want the future to be different or yourself to be healthier or lighter or anything else. But you have to actually start by accepting where you are. And that was one of the hardest things for me to learn. It got in the way. So often I would get in a hurry, or I'd have a self, you know, a judgmental thought about my body, and then I would naturally lean to thinking about food and or diet rather, and I would gain 5 pounds just from thinking about a diet. And it was really weird. And I remember, you know, standing in front of a Coke machine in my company's break room one time and thinking, you know, anytime I do this, I have to stop. My weight goes up, not down. And this was after I had really gotten control of my weight. It was just, you know, these thoughts are very powerful. And our reactions to them are, the subconscious reacts in unusual ways. So self-compassion really, it's this radical acceptance of wherever we are right now. And usually we are where we are because of we've reacted and responded to our world in the best way we know how. And often some people have choose to eat because that's the only way they know how to deal with a feeling they can't handle. And at some point in their life, that probably made a lot of sense. And it helped them. But then it became a habit, and it became their response to everything. And that's when it becomes a real challenge, and we put on weight and can't take it off. So, but we have to accept where we are if we're going to be open to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because it opens up a whole new possibility. When you are gentle with yourself. And when we judge other people, there's an element of self-judgment in that either, that too.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're making ourselves feel better by putting them down, or sometimes we're, finding comfort in that we're judging them as harshly as we're judging ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's often the root of so much pain, one way or the other.
Yes, you know, you're talking about the law of allowing, and for me, the law of allowing means that it's all about what's energetic, out there. How do I accept, as you just said, accept whatever I am, accept whatever someone else is, allow the other to be the other, you know, to be different, in other words.
Uh-huh.
And and accept people for where they are, and that, of course, includes ourselves. So I know that most of the time when there's a judgment about someone else, it actually turns around and says, oh, this is what I really think about me, or that I couldn't do that, or I wouldn't want to be that. It's more of a way of the sort of unconscious level of thinking of, this is really more about a judgment about me. So it's, as you just said, so we have to allow to accept ourselves and accept others where they are. We're all on a journey.
Yeah. You know, when we look at somebody who's overweight, in many, many cases, people have actually dieted up to their top weight. They started lower, and dieting is actually, by trying to fix it, things have actually gotten worse and worse for them. And, you know, that's not the case with everybody, but, you know, dieting is one of the hardest things we can do, actually, because we're fighting our own bodies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, compassion is really the best, and not pity, but just compassion is the best response. And not to the whole situation of obesity in our society. And all this judgment about weight, I really think it's making things worse. Four-year-olds mm-hmm. are coming home from preschool worried about their weight.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, the American Pediatric Association has come out and said they've studied it, and the best thing to say to your children about weight is nothing at all. They need to learn to trust their bodies. And not be judgmental toward them.
Wow.
So,
and you really, what you're talking about with this compassion is really about love, loving oneself.
Yes.
Loving your body just the way it is, and loving yourself just the way you are. It's so important, because we are each so different on this planet. We each are unique. We're children of the Creator. We have this energetic makeup. And each of us is here to do something fantastic in the world. And that could be with your community. It could be nationally. It could be globally. It doesn't matter. Everyone has gifts and talents and is meant to use that. And as I said, everyone's on their own journey. So it's about loving the path that we each are on, and knowing that there's an ideal. You know, your body knows what it wants to be. The body's a miracle machine.
Uh-huh.
It knows how to heal and really be in balance. Becoming aware of that is certainly something that our society doesn't promote to our children or anyone.
No. We've added so many rules, and we've gotten so into our heads. And we just often don't listen to our bodies at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there is wisdom in them, but we have to listen first.
So how can we teach our children differently?
I really advocate supporting their own awareness of how they're feeling. So, you know, you can ask your child, you know, are you hungry? How hungry are you?
Mm-hmm.
What would you really like to eat? You know, what do you most enjoy? And let them know that it's okay not to eat mm-hmm. if they're not hungry. You know, forcing a child to finish a plate out of guilt or whatever reason is not teaching mm-hmm. is not teaching them to trust themselves. And not judging yourself, I think, is probably the biggest thing. They learn by example. And mm-hmm. I know so many women I deal with, their mothers were hard on themselves about their bodies. You know, oh, I'm too fat. And they'll be mm-hmm. looking at their mom, and their mom is perfectly normal. But
right.
she's judging herself. Or, I shouldn't eat this. Or, you know, oh, this cookie looks so good, but I shouldn't eat it. And so kids absorb those messages.
Right.
You know, it's wonderful to see my clients be able to have one cookie and not a whole plate.
That's the hard thing right there.
It can be.
Yeah.
You know, I had one, and it was only like three times we met, and she came back and she said, I used my mixer for the first time. I bought it years ago, but I've never used it. I was afraid. And she said, I've made a batch of cookies, and I baked some, and I gave some away, and I froze some, and it was wonderful. She didn't, like, eat the whole batch of batter. She was thrilled. And that was power. You know, it's very empowering. And kids need to trust themselves and not to, you know, the scales are not, you should, I don't have a scale. My husband has some, but I've never bought a set of scales in my life. And because that's an external measure. Mm-hmm. You should be able to know from how you feel whether or not your weight is on target or if you're trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You know, every time I step on the scale, I know exactly what it's going to say before it does. So,
yeah,
I mean, you're right. We do know whether it's gone up or down or, you know, a pound or two or whatever it is. Intuitively, we can learn that difference.
Yeah. And if we don't know, we're out of touch. But I don't want people to give up the scales right away. If that's what they're relying on, I've had people do that, and it doesn't have good results because they need to learn to listen to their bodies first. And before you give up a crutch, learn to walk. So anyway.
So with children, you know, and I know that when they're active, they anyone, let me just put it this way.
Yeah.
What I'm visualizing in my mind is that when a kid is out playing, or I know I used to play out in nature a lot, I would be gone for hours, and I wouldn't eat when I'm, you know, active and doing things. And then, of course, probably because kids are growing and they really do have a voracious appetite, and they come in and they're hungry. But I know that when I now as an adult get on a project and I'm really into it, I'm doing something I love to do, I don't think about food. The time will go by, and I'm really excited and happy and working on something. But on the contrast, if I'm bored and not doing anything, that's when I feel like I need to eat. So what can we learn
from
that?
So we strategize. Well, we strategize. The first thing is to realize what's going on. So many people just eat reactively. They think, oh, I want food, so I must be hungry. Whereas wanting food is, that's a desire, that's an appetite, but it's not necessarily hunger. So if you pause a little bit, take a few breaths, realize, oh, I'm bored. I could eat, or I could go for a walk, or I could read a book, or I could watch my favorite show. You know, there are lots of things that you could do at that point rather than eat, than to deal with that boredom.
Good
and
point.
If you think about it later on, and one thing to think about, you know, is how you're going to feel later. That's part of the whole thing. And if you do eat too much, don't feel guilty, but do listen to your body. It has a message for you if you've eaten too much, and that's biofeedback. So often we shut that out. It's an uncomfortable feeling, and so we try not to pay attention to that. We just wait for it to go away. But if you listen to it, you're taking in that message from your body, and you'll learn from that eventually.
You know, you mentioned, that a lot of eating is emotional eating. And so do you have techniques that you teach your clients to deal with that emotional component that doesn't involve, obviously, eating?
Yeah. And it's, you know, there are various ones and different things appeal to different people. But there are methods for reducing the urgency in the moment. And I also have tools for helping to surface and name the feelings. Because often we don't know what we're feeling. We just know we're uncomfortable. There's something in us. And usually actually feelings are in the body. We think of them as being in the mind, but usually where we actually, they arise and we notice them because they're actually in our bodies. And I think that's one reason we tend to eat. It's a physical reaction to a physical sensation.
Hmm.
They're tied to emotions that can be expressed in the mind, but often, you know, we feel it, we don't actually have a name for it. So naming it's important because then you can deal with it. Now, I am not a therapist, so sometimes people have serious issues, and those need to be dealt with. But food is not the way to deal with them. So once you name it, you can take it to a therapist and say, okay, you know, I had this issue with my mother. I was 4 years old. But once you've got that out in the open, now you can deal with it and get
over it.
Otherwise, we just keep cycling back into reactivity, and you never get past that. So my clients actually, usually they learn a lot about themselves in this process.
Interesting. So really, it's not only learning how to get in touch with your body intuitively, like with your hunger, but it's also about, oh, I want to eat, so really what's going on here, because I'm not really hungry, but starting to name those emotions of what it might be, and in particular, like what one might be doing or thinking at the time.
Okay. Exactly. You know, we have evolved to seek comfort and pleasure and avoid pain. And so often, you know, eating is a response. It's an avoiding pain, you know, avoiding dealing with something that's causing us discomfort. And part of it is learning to just be with that and accept. It's part of that acceptance we discussed earlier, the allowing. We have to find ways to allow that to flow through us and out of us and let it go.
Wow. So
when we fight it grows. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about your program then, and about sort of what makes people give up on their diets, and then what makes people continue with this? Because this, as you said, is much more gradual. But really what I hear you saying is this is really getting to know yourself more, and not only your past story, you know, where we were as kids and growing up, but also where I want to be now and in the future. And so really it's about, this is really what I hear you saying is putting eating in perspective of who am I, who have I been, who do I want to be, really getting to know oneself, as I said, as a unique human being, correct?
Right. People give up because they find it very difficult to actually deal with those emotions when they realize, when they actually have to face them. And, you know, dieting is not about that. It's about willpower. And fighting off the urge for food, but it doesn't go into why we want the food in the first place. That stays in the background. And some people just can't bear it. All I can do in that case is to support them in their journey and to help them to try to trust themselves and have more belief in their ability to deal with situations without eating. And you know, sometimes people will learn, they will learn the tools and techniques and principles of this way of eating, and they won't lose weight until say 2 or 3 years later, and then all of a sudden then the emotional part kicks in. They figure out what their issue was, and then the weight just comes off. They no longer, you know, they finally got through that last thing that was holding them back. But they've learned enough that now they know. They are at least listening to their bodies and they know. The other thing that motivates them is realizing that they weren't to blame for the diet failures that have happened in the past. And that includes the weight that they've gained as a result of dieting. Because of the eating habits that came out of dieting, the cravings and that kind of thing that it stimulates, that relief is so huge. Some people have felt guilty for 30 years. So to not blame themselves anymore is huge. And to realize that they can actually enjoy their food without guilt is something they never want to give up again. And so that keeps them on the path, even though it can be challenging. And they also learn that there is a weight out there where they're going to be comfortable with themselves And it may not be that ideal weight that we think we have to be happy. Because you know what happens is people get there and they find they're not happy. It
right.
didn't fix their whole world. But there is a weight where if they accept themselves, where they find that they're comfortable, they're at ease with themselves, they have, you know, confidence, and that's actually not a bad place to be. And they can relax into it. And often then they'll lose more weight because now they're actually feeling better about themselves.
And comfortable with
themselves. And that comes over time.
Yeah.
And that, they often may reach that long before they reach some ideal weight. I did. I mean, I reached a weight and it was, I'm quite a bit less than that now. But it was finally, okay, you know, I'm okay. I can live with this. This is good.
Right. And as you said, you're really getting to deal with the emotions and what's underneath the weight and really causing the weight to be there in the first place. And that's really the most important part of all this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I know you have a retreat coming up. What do you cover in the retreat? And this retreat is coming up on February 24th through 26th in Dahlonega, Georgia, in the mountains of Georgia. What would you cover there that people could look forward to?
I basically cover all the principles and tools and many of the techniques that people are going to need to go forward. And it's basically everything I wish I had known, you know, in the beginning. We go
right.
into diets and why they don't work and really help people free up the guilt. We look at their stories. How they got where they were, and help them work through that a little bit. We practice those tools and techniques so that this is not just a lecture. It's very interactive. There'll be a lot of activities. They will learn the various principles and when to put them into practice. You don't want to just try to change everything all at once. That's seldom effective. They'll learn how to deal with some societal pressures, you know, what to say to people who want to know we get pressure to diet from a lot of folks. And some people come right out and say it and other people don't. But, you know, they'll learn how to kind of deal with those situations. And they'll also get to meet people who are in the same situation. You know, often we feel very alone, but we're not. I mean, there are thousands, millions of people who are in this position. And so they'll get to meet some other folks and gain some support there. So I'm hoping when they leave, they'll have all the tools they need to carry on.
So some of these emotional components that we were talking about, people will start to discover those and sort of the reasons for eating?
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes people, the fun thing about being in a group is that you may not even realize something is your issue until somebody else does it.
Yes,
and it's then like, oh, that's right.
I know, that's the beauty of a group. Yes.
Yeah. And so I really like working with groups. I work with individuals too, but it's really fun to work with groups of people. There's a certain magic in it. So, yeah.
So tell us, how can we join the retreat?
Okay. Well, folks can go to my website or they can email me. So I am martha@rethinkingfood.net. Or the website, as you mentioned again, is rethinkingfood.net. There's a retreat page there and there's a link to it on the front page as well. There is actually no charge for participation in the retreat. People need to pay for their room and meals at the Dahlonega Spa Resort, but I'm only charging a deposit, and that's completely refundable at the door. They'll get a check at the door. So that's really just so I know and can guarantee that you're coming and I can plan on being there. There are not a lot of rooms up there, and my room block is not real large, so people need to register soon. There's information about that on the website. There's
Excellent.
Also, if someone's interested, I have a free workshop on Saturday, the 20, 20, 28th of January at the Atlanta Shambhala Center at 4 o'clock. So that's a great opportunity for somebody who wants to find out more. It's probably going to be about 90 minutes long.
So we're actually, we are recording this, and this isn't live, but the show is coming out on the 31st, so it will be
after that.
No, it's okay. Uh-huh. Are you doing more at the Shambhala Center later in the year?
I don't have one in February there, but if people sign up, send me an email or sign up for my email list, I'll notify them. I'm hoping to have some more before the retreat, or certainly there will be more free workshops later in the year.
Fantastic, Martha. Thank you. So we're getting to the end of the show. Is there any last words of wisdom you have for our listeners today?
Okay. I guess the one thing to say to people is if you didn't finish a diet or you gained all the weight back, you didn't fail. The diet failed you. It set you up to regain all the weight and then some. So don't fight your body. Find a peaceful path that leads to self-confidence, self-acceptance, and joy. Thank you so much.
Wow. Thank you, Martha, for being on the Peace Brain Show. It's been a delight, and what a universal topic is to talk about peace and your body and food. So
thank you, Gail. I've really appreciated it.
Oh, it's been fun. All right. So again, for everyone, you can find more about Martha at rethinkingfood.net, and you can email her from her webpage or at martha@rethinkingfood.net. And so thank you, Martha McGinnis. All right, well, take a breath, everyone. We're going to go into our Peace Brain meditation. Ah, lots of wonderful. I see candy canes and lollipops, you know, spinning around in the room in my mind. So let me invite you to also close your eyes and in your mind, think about food. Just think about how food makes you feel. And we all have different relationships with food and with different types of food as well. So first of all, let me give you a tool, as I usually do on these shows, and that is a grounding cord. And that is an energetic connection from between your last vertebrae and the center of the earth. So I like to visualize a tree trunk or a beam of light coming out of my last vertebrae, my spine, going down into Mother Earth, really anchoring well into her iron crystal core. And it's kind of like the third prong on an electrical outlet, that grounding wire, that if energy comes down that wire and surges, rather than burning out the wire, it goes into the earth to be recycled and go into the earth as a neutral energy. So your grounding cord is your grounding wire. So when energy comes your way, judgments from other people, thoughts of food and society, or I haven't done it right, just let it flow down that grounding cord and be siphoned off into Mother Earth. She takes all the energy and recycles it and makes it into new, fresh energy to be used for some other creations. So take a breath and have your grounding wire, your grounding cord. And then another tool is a rose flower. And roses are very sacred. They are used in all sacred texts. They have a very high vibration. Rose oil vibrates around 320 megahertz. And our bodies are somewhere around 65 megahertz. So just like that opera singer and shattering with her high note, the glass, the denser vibrations, roses, because they are such a high vibration, can be really protective and shatter all negative energy coming in. So I want you to visualize a rose out in front of you, about arm's length, and this works around you. It would be creating a bubble around you from your left to your right, above your head, below your feet, behind you, and in front of you, creating this bubble about arm's length all the way around you. And this is your protection rose, it just creates your space. This is your space. And no one else's energy belongs in your space except yours. So allow any thoughts that come your way that are judgmental thoughts. I invite you to put an imaginary mirror up in front of you and look at yourself and your body. And to let all of those judgmental thoughts go down your grounding cord to be recycled into Mother Earth. And start to bring in from above you this beautiful golden light that is your divine essence, your being, your energy, and allow it to fill your bubble and fill every cell of your body with the words of acceptance and love and compassion, of perfection, of freedom, of ease. Begin to fill yourself and yourselves with that beautiful divine light that is yours, and know that you are perfect just the way you are. You are on a journey, your life's journey, and wherever you need to be is exactly where you need to be, where you are. So take a breath and know that your relationship with food is much more than just the hunger. And of course, the body, really all it needs food for is an energy source. But we in our societies have put so much more energetic layering on top of food that it has become much more than simply satisfying hunger. So know that you have the capacity to change your relationship with food by beginning to know yourself, beginning to recognize your emotions, beginning to honor your journey that you have already taken, your past from birth to where you are now, and your present, and then your dreams and expectations of what your goals in life are going forth in the future. You know, energetically, we remake ourselves moment by moment. And so just now, you are not the same person you were before we started this meditation, or certainly before we started the call, the radio show today. So know that you can change moment by moment and really feel the love that you are. You are this beautiful, great, divine love. Soak it in. Bring in a pink light, if you will. This love of the Creator, this love of yourself, this love for your body, every cell of your body. See the radiance glow out of this beautiful pink light and gold light. See your radiance move out from your bubble, out into the world. Because you are here making a difference. You are here to be a healing for so many people. Just by your presence, just by your magnificence, just by your light. And take a breath and feel the peacefulness of accepting who you are and knowing that you have greater talents, capabilities, you have gifts that the world wants to see. You are here for a purpose. You are here to be love. So breathe in that love and breathe out the light. And then breathe in the light and breathe out the love. And know that when you see food, honor it. Give it a blessing. Know that it's here to nourish your body, and that your body does need sustenance and energy. And you will know by listening to your body what is right for it. Feel the love that you are. I honor you. You are beautiful. There's a wonderful Navajo prayer that when you visualize your roses out in front of you and behind you and to your left and your right and above you and below your feet, that bubble that you're walking in, here's what the Navajo prayer goes like. And I'll sing it to you. In beauty I walk, with beauty before me I walk, with beauty behind me I walk, with beauty below me I walk, with beauty above me I walk, with beauty all around me I walk. It is finished in beauty, it is finished in beauty, it is finished in beauty. So know that you are beauty. You walk with those roses. You walk with beauty all around you. Namaste. Open your eyes. Take a breath. Bring yourself back to this room, wherever you are. And I want to thank you so much for being on the Peace Brain Show today. And remember that if you want to connect with me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, or email me at hello@peacebrain.org. And again, I want to thank my guest today, Ms. Martha McGinnis, and you can find out more about Martha and her retreats and workshops coming up at rethinkingfood.net. So now, please go forth and activate your peace brain and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.